On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Michael Tomalaris. Coming up tonight, Labor welcomes the Senate defeat of the controversial citizenship changes.
It was a stupid law. The idea that we're going to start setting university language tests had a whole lot of migrants and a whole lot of long-standing Australian residents up in arms.
Peter Dutton says the citizenship proposals will now be redrafted with an easier English language test.
We had proposed level 6, which is competent, and we've proposed to bring that down to level 5 on a scale of 1 to 9, with 4 as basic.
And furious French farmers oppose an EU trade deal with Australia.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock with the news. I'm Mike Tomalaris. New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters has announced he will form a coalition with Labor, handing Jacinda Ardern the Prime Ministership. New Zealanders have been waiting for a result since last month's election that saw neither of the major parties able to form government on their own. Mr. Peters' decision to back a Labor government ends nearly a decade of national rule. And he says he owed the decision to the people of New Zealand.
We had a choice to make, whether it was either with National or Labor, for a modified status quo or for change. In our negotiations, both National and Labor were presented with that opportunity. Working together, cooperating together for New Zealand. That's why, in the end, we chose a coalition government of New Zealand First with the New Zealand Labor Party.
Opposition leader Bill Shorten has welcomed the Senate's backdown on the government's proposed citizenship changes, which were blocked in the Senate last night. The measures were tossed out of the Senate on Wednesday night, last night after the government failed to meet a deadline to bring legislation on for debate. Mr. Shorten says the proposal was not in the interests of ordinary Australians.
It was a stupid law. The idea that we're going to start setting university language tests had a whole lot of migrants and a whole lot of long-standing Australian residents up in arms. These people, all long-term residents born in other countries, were deeply insulted. Who knows what Dutton's going to cook up now? And, you know, it's up to the government. They present their legislation. If it's bad for the interests of ordinary people, we won't vote for it.
Independent federal MP Andrew Wilkie is accusing the Liberal Party and the Labor Party of trying to just brush away allegations levelled at Victoria's Crown Casino. Whistleblowers have accused Crown of tampering with poker machines to increase gambling losses and ignoring drug use and domestic violence. They also accused the Victorian Commission for Liquor and Gambling Regulation of inadequately investigating complaints and Crown of letting gamblers dodge money laundering laws. Mr. Wilkie is calling for a parliamentary inquiry into the claims.
I mean, these allegations are remarkable, and they don't just go to poker machines. They go to money laundering, they go to violence, they go to the use of drugs, they go to a suite of state and federal laws, which, if these allegations are true, this is remarkably serious criminal behaviour. We need to get to the bottom of it.
US President Donald Trump has denied he made insensitive remarks to the widow of a soldier killed in an ambush in Niger in Africa. A Florida congresswoman says she heard part of the conversation between Maisha Johnson and Mr. Trump when they were on their way to Miami International Airport to meet the body of Johnson's husband, David. Frederica Wilson says she couldn't believe what she heard.
Sarcastically, he said, but you know, he must have known what he signed up for. But how could you say that to a grieving widow? I couldn't believe. And he said it more than once.
President Trump says the claim is fabricated and says he has proof that's not what he said. US-backed forces are working to remove landmines and clear roads in the city of Raqqa a day after commanders announced they had driven out IS from its de facto capital. The Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces say preparations are underway for a formal declaration of the city's liberation. Spokesman for the US coalition, Colonel Ryan Dillon, has tweeted that 95% of the city is now under full coalition control. The federal government is claiming credit for a rise in full-time employment. Australian Bureau of Statistics figures show full-time employment rose by 6,100 in September, with the number of part-time employees up by 13,700. The nation's unemployment rate fell slightly to 5.5%. That's down from 5.6% in August. Employment Minister Michaelia Cash says it's because of government policy.
Employers are responding to the policies that we are putting in place. They are creating jobs. They're creating jobs in record numbers this calendar year. They are creating full-time jobs in record numbers.
In sport, Melbourne Victory coach Kevin Muscat has dismissed speculation around the Socceroos' coaching role, calling it boring and a distraction in the lead-up to next month's World Cup qualifying showdown with Honduras. There were suggestions after the Socceroos' defeat of Syria last week that Postecoglou could walk from his job even if he becomes the first Australian coach to qualify the team for a World Cup. Postecoglou has not commented on the rumours. And now a look at the weather for Friday. In Perth, sunny, a top of 30 degrees. Adelaide, mostly sunny, 20. In Melbourne, partly cloudy, 17 degrees the maximum. Also partly cloudy for Hobart, 17. Canberra, rain easing, 21. In Sydney, rain and becoming windy, a top of 20. In Brisbane, possible late showers, 26. And Greg, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 6:07. Immigration Minister Peter Dutton is to redraft his proposed citizenship bill after suffering a defeat in the Senate. The measures were thrown out of the Senate last night after the government failed to meet a deadline to bring legislation on for debate. This report from Peggy Giacomellis.
Immigration Minister Peter Dutton has confirmed the government's sweeping reforms to citizenship will be redrafted with an easier English language test and eventually reintroduced back to the Senate. The original bill would have extended the waiting time for permanent residents to apply for citizenship and created tougher English language tests as well as extra powers for the minister. Minister Dutton says he has had a positive reaction to the proposal from many crossbench senators, with some even urging the government to go further. But he's accused the federal opposition of not acting in the national interest.
They are opposed to our proposition that if somebody has been on welfare benefits, they're of a working age, they've got a capacity to work, but that they've been on welfare benefits for 4 years, that they should be eligible to become an Australian citizen without any question. So let the Labor Party explain their position, because at the moment they're playing this sort of populist position with the Greens.
The original bill failed to pass, with Labor, the Greens and the Nick Xenophon team all opposed. Greens Senator Nick McKim says the bill's defeat was a great win for multicultural Australia and is pleased the changes have been knocked back.
There are many thousands of people whose lives have basically been put on hold by Peter Dutton, and from today those people can now move forward with their lives, make choices about their future and have confidence that their applications will be assessed under the current legislation, not Peter Dutton's White Australia legislation, which the Senate has rejected.
Migrants who have already put in applications for citizenship and those who still plan to will be assessed under current requirements. Reforms to the bill the government is willing to consider include accepting migrants who pass an English entrance exam at Band 5 on the international testing standard rather than Band 6 as previously proposed. The tougher Band 6 test was a major sticking point in the Senate, including for the crucial Nick Xenophon team on the crossbench. Band 5 is described as modest English user rather than a competent one. The government says it will continue to negotiate with crossbench senators over the citizenship changes in the hope of getting them through. Finance Minister Matthias Cormann says they haven't given up on the reforms yet.
We want Australia's success as a successful multicultural nation to continue to strengthen and strengthen. These reforms are an important part of that, and we'll continue to engage with non-government senators to reach a consensus, and as soon as that has been secured, we'll proceed.
Opposition Leader Bill Shorten has welcomed the Senate's back down, saying the proposal was not in the interests of ordinary Australians.
It was a stupid law. The idea that we're going to start setting university language tests had a whole lot of migrants and a whole lot of long-standing Australian residents up in arms. These people, all long-term residents born in other countries, were deeply insulted. Who knows what Dutton's going to cook up now? And you know, it's up to the government. They present their legislation. If it's bad for the interests of ordinary people, we won't vote for it.
The government also wanted to impose its crackdown retrospectively, affecting everyone who applied for citizenship since its policy was announced on April the 20th. It is now willing to hold fire on the changes until July the 1st next year.
Thank you, Giacomelis, reporting. Well, ethnic community groups have welcomed the defeat of the original citizenship proposals. Samantha Beniak-Brooks reports.
Ethnic and advocacy groups in Australia are applauding the decision of the Senate to kill off proposed changes to the nation's citizenship laws. It follows a federal government announcement this year of planned changes, which would have made it harder to become an Australian. The proposal would have required applicants to live in Australia for 4 years on permanent residency visas and demonstrate competence in a tough English language test. Ethnic Communities Council of Victoria Chairman Eddie McAuliffe says migrants and refugees would be happy the laws have been blocked.
I can only estimate that they would be most happy about that rejection and feel as though they are not being ostracised on the basis of their refugee or migrant background.
In April, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull insisted the proposed changes were consistent with Australian multicultural values. But the Migration and Mobility Research Network's Val Cholich-Pieska says the government's bill was purely responding to xenophobia in Australia.
This is a surge of xenophobia in Australia over the past years and perhaps we can say decades even. So our treatment of refugees, for example, and mistrust towards Muslim communities in the general population certainly create an idea that migrants may be a problem in many ways and that we should be really careful who we let in and who we let become Australian citizen, which is the ultimate acceptance, if you like.
She says the bill was an attempt to pander to those fears.
This toughening attempt, which wasn't successful in this instance, of toughening the rules as part of this government's pandering to the fear that they created or they helped create and develop in the general population.
The Victorian convener of the Asian Australian Alliance, Melina Hastana, says Asian communities were feeling nervous after the changes were suggested. She says many felt they may be excluded, despite having adequate levels of English to live in Australia. Ms. Hastana says the proposed changes were elitist.
I believe that the proposed laws were quite elitist and they appear to impose on other people their own sort of notion of superiority, which comes with the English language. There's a lot of people from other backgrounds whose first language is not English who are contributing significantly to Australian society, you know, in terms financially, socially, culturally. And to marginalise these people, I feel is extremely elitist.
She says most Asian migrants make an effort to learn a good level of English anyway.
A lot of them are making that effort to learn more because they have to learn to live independently. Nobody's going to look after them. It's not their home country where they'll have the full family support or, you know, village support or whatever. It may not be the highest level, but at least at the very basic level or a little bit better than the basic level to be able to live a proper, decent life here.
Eddie McAuliffe suggests most Australians would not be able to pass a university-level English test. He says his father, a migrant, was a capable citizen who had what he calls a colloquial level of English, and that still enabled him to participate in an Australian life. Mr. McAuliffe says many migrants help form the backbone of Australia.
Have a look at the contributions that migrants have made to this country. A lot of them that have made significant contributions probably would have failed the test proposed by the current government had they have got through. This country has been built on the back of migrants and refugee or with their strong support. And I think we should never underestimate that input.
The chairman of the Ethnic Communities Council of Victoria, Eddie McAuliffe, ending that story by Samantha Beniak-Brooks. 16 past 6. A new report has found it's getting harder for low-skilled job seekers to break into the workforce. Anglicare Australia commissioned the report and is calling for more government intervention to help low-skilled workers overcome barriers. Rosemary Bolger reports.
Australia's unemployment rate has hit a four-year low, falling 0.1 of a percentage point this month to 5.5%. The Employment Minister, Michaelia Cash, is spruiking the latest results.
We have a record number of Australians in full-time jobs. In fact, job creation in total and in full-time employment is the strongest it has ever been in terms of the first 9 months of a calendar year.
But some job seekers are finding it harder than ever. A report commissioned by Anglicare Australia has found entry-level jobs are drying up. In 2006, nearly 22% of all vacancies were entry-level jobs. In May this year, only 15% of all advertised jobs were entry-level. Anglicare's Deputy Director, Roland Manderson, says that means 124,000 job seekers who only qualified for entry-level roles are competing for 26,000 jobs. That's five people for every position.
The job market has failed the people who are on the edges, who need the support more than anyone else. We have a job market that doesn't serve the needs of the poorer people in our community.
Underemployment is also a problem.
Someone who hasn't had much job experience and hasn't got many qualifications, they need a good job to give them a kind of a pathway into career and opportunity. Just a piece of work here and there isn't going to do the job for them.
That's prompted calls to stop stigmatising job seekers and ensure new jobs created in the aged care and disability services go to those facing the greatest barriers.
Let's not put them on a ridiculous hamster wheel of work for the dole and jobs they can't get and training that is meaningless, but really build the work for them that works and pay them enough to live on in the meantime.
Labor's Minister for Employment and Workplace, Brendan O'Connor, agrees something needs to change.
There's five people fighting for one entry-level job in this economy, and at the same time, this government is seeking to punish job seekers if they can't find work, even when there is no work to find.
The aged care sector has been identified as an industry that can provide huge employment opportunities. TAFE New South Wales Managing Director John Black says enrolments in aged care courses are increasing, but they're not keeping up with the demand.
Where we've got areas of skill shortages, we have got to really meet that demand and attract more people to the industry. And that's what TAFE New South Wales needs to do, because the industry is screaming out for more qualified people, and we need to respond to that demand.
He urges those struggling to find work to consider a career in aged care, regardless of their background.
There's a person that was involved with making neon signs. There was a person working in the construction industry. There was a young lady who was in commercial finance. These are people changing careers. And what they're seeing is a sector that is crying out for qualified and passionate people.
That story by Rosemary Bolger. Well, coming up in the show, rugby league great Andrew Johns says that France could be set for a renaissance in the Rugby League World Cup, which kicks off in Melbourne on Friday. The country was once a powerhouse in the sport, making the final of the tournament in 1954 and in 1968.
I remember going to the Kangaroo reunions and talking to the older players about the French team. They said they were unbeatable in the 50s and 60s. But not only that, they played with a flair and they played the game with their own style.
That story coming up. Farmers in France are opposing a European Union trade deal with Australia. And so far their campaigning has worked, with the French Prime Minister Emmanuel Macron now urging other EU leaders not to rush to a deal. Our chief international correspondent, Brett Mason, is in Brussels and says the change of tune comes just months after Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull talked up the prospect of a trade deal.
It's interesting, isn't it? Malcolm Turnbull met with the European Council and European Commission presidents at the G20 summit in Hamburg. From there, he travelled to the Elysee Palace, a guest of the French President Emmanuel Macron, where the Prime Minister reaffirmed a commitment to sign a free trade agreement with the European Union within 18 months. He said that was ambitious but realistic, and those words have been repeated time and time again by the European Commissioner Jean-Claude Juncker, who is very keen to secure not only a free trade agreement with Australia and New Zealand, but also some other countries. But we now know ahead of this European Council meeting that is due to begin in a few hours' time here in Brussels, that Emmanuel Macron has already begun to sound out other European leaders and say that the brakes should be applied. These talks should not be fast-tracked. They should be slowed down in order for the European Council leaders to have a very clear idea of what they want to get out of these trade negotiations. He says there's no point rushing in, signing any deal. The European Council needs to be more strategic in its approach, particularly after widespread criticism of the trade deal signed with Canada, which was almost derailed by a group of Belgian politicians and parliamentarians. That's very interesting, given that Australia awarded France a very lucrative defence contract to build some submarines. There has been a big effort, a big diplomatic push to win over France and other European nations, including Germany. And while this is seen as somewhat of a setback, very vocal opposition from French farmers who worry about beef and dairy and agricultural exports from Australia, the overriding message I'm hearing here in Brussels is that everyone still wants a free trade deal. There just may be some items, some products that are excluded or are perhaps subject to quotas, including dairy and beef.
Now, I understand EU trade officials are about to visit Australia. What are they likely to want from any negotiations here?
Well, a lot of the attention is focused on the criticisms of what Australia might get out of the European Union, but make no mistake, the European Union sees Australia as a, according to their briefing documents that I've seen, an untapped market. It is the world's 14th largest economy. It's growing faster than many other economies. And the European Union has made clear that it wants a part of that. And many of the documents that I've seen seem to almost have a sense of anger or a sense of frustration that other nations are given fairer access. They talk about wanting a level playing field. They say that countries like Japan, China, Korea, and the United States don't have to pay vehicle import tariffs, whereas European car manufacturers do, and that's a big hit to their industry. Of course, Australia has free trade agreements with those nations, and that's going to prove a very good bargaining chip when it comes to talking about things like agriculture, because the car sector, the automotive manufacturing sector, is very keen to see some of those tariffs fall down. There's also criticism, too, about Australia's biosecurity measures. One of the documents refers to them being unnecessarily stringent and trade prohibitive in terms of things like pork. Imports. Of course, there have been some concerns raised in Australia about the safety of pork exportation in Europe, as we've seen over the last few years, including in the UK. So there are many areas where they're keen to negotiate with Australia, and that will happen in a few weeks when a trade delegation from the European Parliament, made up of MEPs, will visit Sydney and Melbourne and Canberra, and they'll begin to pave the way for those formal negotiations. Of course, they want them wrapped up by the end of 2019, so that is, by European and some might say Canberra standards, a very, very short time frame to negotiate a very big deal that could see our exports from the European Union increase by a third.
Chief International Correspondent Brett Mason in Brussels. And you can get more on this story tonight on SBS World News at 6:30. If you're not near a TV, you can live stream our news on our website, sbs.com.au/news. France will be an underdog at the Rugby League World Cup, which kicks off next Friday in Melbourne. But the country was once a powerhouse in the sport, making the final of the tournament in 1954 and 1968. And with the help of Rugby League immortal Andrew Johns, the French could be set for a renaissance. Here's Adrian Acciulli.
France has arrived in Australia with a point to prove. Star playmaker Theo Tharg says the team has a responsibility to help grow rugby league in the country.
Got a bit of, work to do for the French rugby league in France. You know, it's not the biggest sport in France, so you know, we're here to do well in the World Cup, and hopefully we're going to work hard and try to perform to do that. We got a young side here, and we're looking forward to the first game against Lebanon on the 29th. Yeah, we got a massive chance to build the rugby league in France, and you know, it starts with France, with the national team.
The French were once a dominant force in rugby league. During the 1950s and 60s, France made two World Cup finals and beat Australia 11 times. Captain Jason Batiri says the players are well aware of the country's rich history.
Certainly in the 50s, I mean, there was world-class teams. They were actually unofficial world champions at one stage. So, you know, we are aware of that as the French team is all French people. They're all born in France. So there's a rich history and culture behind it. And, you know, we're just trying to make our country proud and really play for the jersey.
Coach Aurélien Collini says it's important the players understand what it means to represent France.
That's the base, you know. If you want to know where you go, you have to know where you come from. That's very important. So the history of the French rugby league, the history of the French international players, we talk about that at the players always because we want to keep the history with us. We bring the history with us. And the French rugby league was in the world history very important. But now we need to try to focus on build again that. And the player now, they will have a big part of that. And they have to take a chance and give the maximum to restart and to write another history in the next 10 years.
France's monumental achievements in the past has been acknowledged by one of Australia's greatest ever players, Andrew Johns.
I remember going to the Kangaroo reunions and talking to the older players about the French team. They said they were unbeatable in the 50s and 60s. But not only that, they played with a flair and they played the game with their own style. And they said they were near impossible to beat. And they spoke about some of the characters who played for them. And it's a shame that rugby union's so big in France and probably taken over from rugby league. But even here, seeing some of these players, there's some big builds, some big bodies, and there's some great skills there.
Johns is helping the team prepare for the Rugby League World Cup.
Jumped at the opportunity. Just something to give back, I suppose. Now the game's given me everything, so it's only right to give back.
Theo Tharg says it's an honour to learn from Johns.
It's massive, you know, to have him there. It's, you know, we all know how good of a player he is, and you know, he's a legend. And to work with him and a bit of a kicking game with him at the end there, it's a massive opportunity for us.
France begins its campaign against Lebanon in Canberra next Sunday, with the winner likely to make the quarterfinals.
Adrian Acciulli with that story. Time to check the news headlines now. And New Zealand First leader Winston Peters has announced that he'll form a coalition with Labor, which hands Jacinta Ardern the prime ministership and ends nearly a decade of national rule across the Tasman. Victoria's Youth Parole Board says more than 40% of youths detained on parole are either Aboriginal, Maori, Pacific Islander or Sudanese. The head of Kenya's Electoral Commission says he can't guarantee that next week's presidential election will be free and fair, citing interference from politicians and threats of violence against his colleagues. The United States says Myanmar should bear the responsibility for a crackdown on the Rohingya Muslim minority, which has seen more than 500,000 people flee. And Australia's unemployment rate has fallen to 5.5% for September, down from 5.6% in August. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see Janice Peterson bringing you SBS World News across Australia. Our content is available on our website at sbs.com.au/news. You can also get it in your Facebook news feed by liking our page, SBS World News. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.